From WHQR Public Media in Wilmington, North Carolina, this is Coastline. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn. The coronavirus crisis has not left many sectors of the economy alone in its destruction. With the possible exception of manufacturers of toilet paper, hand sanitizer, face masks, ventilators, and other items in short supply right now, one in four small businesses say they are 2 months or less from closing permanently due to the economic crisis caused by the coronavirus pandemic. That's according to a recent poll from MetLife and the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. That same survey shows one in 10 small businesses are less than 1 month away from shutting down. But since stay-at-home orders have dropped in most states around the U.S., any business that can't make a case for being an essential service has suspended operations. Restaurants and bars are either closing altogether or trying to figure out how to fill the revenue gap created by the loss of dine-in and drink-in customers. The federal government has appropriated money for economic relief, but the requirements for getting the aid change frequently, and so many people have rushed to claim it at the same time, there are reports of bank websites crashing. Today, we'll talk with two people who are counseling the owners of small businesses during this time of crisis. Heather McWhorter is the Regional Center Director for the Small Business and Technology Development Center at the University of North Carolina, Wilmington. Heather McWhorter, welcome to Coastline.
Thank you for having me.
Ken Jernigan volunteers for SCORE, which is a national nonprofit network of expert business mentors that works with the U.S. Small Business Administration. Before he retired, Ken Jernigan served as chief financial officer for a manufacturing company, and he's advised banks on corporate finance. He also works as a part-time consultant for some of his former clients. Ken Jernigan, welcome to the program.
Thanks. Happy to be here.
And we're inviting you to join the conversation. Are you a small business owner? How are you navigating the crisis? Have you had to close your business? Tell us about it with an email on this Wednesday, April 8th at coastline@whqr.org. Just a reminder, we can't take phone calls while I'm broadcasting from home, but that email address is coastline@whqr.org. Heather McWhorter, I want to start with you. Is there anybody from a small business point of view, who is doing well at this point? What is working?
Well, some entrepreneurs are taking time now to rethink their business model. It's giving them some reflection time. But honestly, those that are doing well that we're seeing are the healthcare-related businesses and then the manufacturers that are helping to respond.
We've heard that some local businesses are making kind of creative attempts at drawing more customers, for instance, for takeout. We heard about Port City Java giving away rolls of toilet paper. Rebellion NC is actually selling toilet paper for $1, which you can get with your burger. Does this really make a difference in terms of filling that revenue gap, Ken Jernigan?
Well, as it relates to the restaurants themselves, I guess those are great efforts to get customers to come by, but I don't see it replacing the dine-in revenue. It's just very difficult for these businesses to sell to the customers now, and that's going to impact the top line.
Right. And of course, this recent Chamber of Commerce survey that I referenced talks about how close some of these businesses are to permanently closing. Is it possible for small businesses to have enough of a cushion, 3 to 6 months, that some experts recommend, or is that just wildly unrealistic? Ken Jernigan?
Was that for Heather or for me?
Either one of you, but go ahead, Ken.
I don't see too many small businesses that have that kind of a cushion. A lot of them are in industries that are extremely competitive, and that's reflected in their margins. Their margins tend to be a bit thinner. It would be great to have, but I just do not see that very often.
And this is Heather McWhorter. Go ahead.
Yeah, if I could chime in also. Businesses usually don't have this capital set aside to weather this type of disaster. I really think that the businesses that will make it through are the ones that are planning strategically now, thinking about, does it make sense to keep bringing staff back to, you know, do the curbside pickups? The other thing that I think will really differentiate the businesses is whether or not they take advantage of the federal incentives that are being offered right now.
So let's get into that then. Tell us about what some of those incentives are that are available.
Sure. So there are several different options available to businesses. The most recent one that was just released under the CARES Act, that's Coronavirus Aid, Relief, and Economic Security Act, is called the Paycheck Protection Program, or PPP. That PPP program can offer 8 weeks of payroll for small businesses, and it can be forgiven if you keep those employees on payroll. And so that program is available through banks and credit unions that are federally approved. It's a great program. It's first come, first served. So we are urging businesses that are considering this program to apply for it right away if they think it's a good fit for them. It has great terms, 1%, 2 year, again, forgivable. A second program available is the Economic Injury Disaster Loan, the EIDL. And that program we had a lot of luck with after Hurricane Florence. It's a standard disaster loan product for small businesses. However, this time around under the CARES Act, they did make it a little bit more lenient for businesses to apply. So, for example, if a business wasn't able to get that loan after Hurricane Florence, I do recommend that they apply again for this EIDL. The EIDL can be up to $2 million, 3.75%. And it's this time around, it's solely based on the business credit score versus cash flow.
Okay, going back to the Paycheck Protection Program, that's something Marco Rubio, who is the Senate Small Business Committee Chair, says the need for the next round of funding amounts to between $200 and $250 billion. And is that something, are we hearing that this could get passed as soon as tomorrow?
I guess anything's possible these days, right? the issue with this, the PPP and the second wave of this is the implementation, though. And demand has been so great that a lot of the systems have broken down in terms of application. Also, we've heard that some of the large lenders are finished. They've gone through their allocation of it. Happens in a couple of days. So I think that's where the challenge in the program. It's not just the dollars, but how do you actually get the dollars into the bank accounts of the small businesses that need them?
Right. And Judd Watkins of Wrightsville Beach Brewery wrote an opinion piece for the Greater Wilmington Business Journal. Actually, somebody I think has their radio turned up, and so we're getting an echo. If you could just turn that down, that would be really helpful. Thank you. Judd Watkins of Wrightsville Beach Brewery writes, if full forgiveness of the PPP loan hinges on rehiring to full staffing levels, I would kindly ask that Congress continue to refine the process by adding special provisions for the hospitality industry, so that you don't put business owners in the awkward position of asking employees to return to work in a space that has been mandated by the government to be closed. Ken Jernigan, have you been hearing about this kind of a push-pull in the restaurant industry?
Well, yeah, and there are some exceptions for the hospitality industry, but they tend to favor large franchise chains or large hotel chains that would run afoul of the small business definition under the SBA. So they've been kind of exempted out of that. In Wrightsville Beach Brewery's case, that doesn't really apply because I think they've only got two locations, and many fewer than 500 employees. But they don't actually have to work. I mean, the idea of the PPP is to keep people on the employment rolls. And as I understand it, and these things do change daily on this, you really just have to keep them on the rolls. They don't have to actually be doing something. The idea is to not get them through to the unemployment rolls. And also, it's not full employment, technically. Under the regs, you're eligible for forgiveness if you maintain 75% of your headcount for an eight-week period that commences when you get your loan. So that's technically how it works. And I understand it is a problem for some restaurants to come to grips with this.
So is part of this, Ken Jernigan, just a misunderstanding of how it works? Or is it that the requirements have been changing?
Yes and no, but everybody's been misunderstanding. The way these programs roll out through the SBA is that you get the legislation that says we want A, B, C, and D. And then it's over to you, SBA, to write the rules on how it's implemented. And we've seen changes almost on a daily basis in this program, which is why people are confused. I mean, the term of the PPP loan, for example, initially was 10 years. And then the regs came out and said, no, it's going to be 2 years. Treasury came out and said, the rate's going to be 0.5%. The banks complained, and Treasury said, okay, 1%. So it's easy to understand why there's confusion out there.
Yeah. You're listening to Coastline. Heather McWhorter of UNCW's SBTDC and Ken Jernigan of SCORE are with us today, offering some insight for small businesses during the coronavirus crisis. When we come back from this break, we'll hear from some listeners. You can ask your own question by emailing us at coastline@whqr.org. I'm Rachel Lewis Hilburn for Coastline. Listening to Coastline, I'm Rachel Lewis Hilburn. Businesses are struggling as stay-at-home orders continue. Some have had to shut down operations entirely. Others are trying to adjust to a changed but temporary landscape. Two business counselors are with us on this Wednesday and answering your questions. Heather McWhorter is Regional Center Director of UNCW's Small Business Technology and Development Center. And Ken Jernigan, a retired CFO, is a volunteer for SCORE, a national nonprofit network of business mentors. You can ask your own question during the live April 8th discussion, or tell us how you're dealing with your economic challenges by sending an email to coastline@whqr.org. We can't take phone calls, but we can take emails on Wednesday, April 8th, coastline@whqr.org. Heather McWhorter, you've described your organization, UNCW's Small Business and Technology Development Center, as something of a first responder for these kinds of economic crises. When a business comes to you, how do you approach the triage process? What's first?
I would say what's first is the immediate need. You know, as business counselors, we want to do a holistic view of the business, but if there are quick questions about loan application, about which banks to contact, how to proceed, we will absolutely answer that first. And then once the immediacy is down, then we can continue counseling with that business. SBTDC and SCORE are both free to the businesses in our community. We're funded by the Small Business Administration. And so I do encourage small businesses that have quick questions or need a more holistic view of their business to contact either of our organizations for help.
Is there generalized advice you can give? For instance, let's say I own a house cleaning company in a very small business. I have six employees and my margins are already pretty tight. I've, of course, had to shut down the business, and so now I'm offering to do things like run errands or get groceries, pick up prescriptions, help in any way. But is there anything that I can do now so that I don't completely lose all the work I've put into building this business?
I would say what needs to be done now is to cut any unnecessary expenses, to contact lenders about existing loans to see if deferments are available. With most federal disaster loans and things like that, they're automatically extended through the end of the year, but just check in, cut costs, cut costs, cut costs, and then think about these loan products to get through this disaster.
And you've mentioned the Paycheck Protection Program, the Economic Injury Disaster Loan, which you said was something that came into play a lot in the aftermath of Hurricane Florence. And both of you, Ken Jernigan and Heather McWhorter, you had to help some small businesses through that aftermath. Are there parallels here, Ken Jernigan?
Well, yeah, the application process is fundamentally the same. The only real difference is that in natural disasters like hurricanes, it focuses really more on property loss, and this is gauging economic loss, which is loss of revenue, and that's kind of how they're basing the loan amounts for the EIDL loans. But fundamentally, the process was the same. One of the things that we saw, though, under when Florence came through was there were community-based lenders that were willing to step into the breach and make bridge loans pending disbursement of an SBA disaster loan. As always, when a lot of demand shows up for products like this, the wait time gets longer. So there are a number of these community lender groups that did this. And we've seen a few in this instance, but they've run out of money quickly. And I've looked at other places in the country where municipalities are trying to put together funds to do this. And that's one thing that could really help some folks out with their liquidity issues, if somehow we could pull together groups that would make bridge loans that would be taken out by the disbursement of an economic relief loan.
What would the model for that be? What does a coalition of people or businesses or groups look like that would create bridge loans?
Well, I mean, for example, in Florence, one of the groups was Thread Capital that did this, and they were part of the Golden Leaf Foundation. So they funded through grants from Golden Leaf and made the loans that way. And they did a very good job, in my experience, with that. And they were active recently, but they just did not have enough money to meet the demand. That's the huge difference here, is the demand is overwhelming for all lenders.
Yeah. The provisions for chain hotels and restaurants have supposedly improved, but what is the difference between, for example, a Courtyard by Marriott in downtown Wilmington, part of an international chain, and, say, a bed and breakfast in downtown Wilmington? What are the differences in how those two would approach getting through this?
Oh, that's getting a little bit in the weeds on the SBA regs, but I'll give it a shot. They have what's called affiliation rules, which means that basically they will link entities that have common ownership or common control and aggregate all of those entities for the purposes of counting up to the 500 employees. That is the test for definition. What they've done for, say, chain hotels in this case, is to exempt them from that affiliation requirement and only counting the employees at one particular site in order to meet the definition. So very common in the hotel business, especially in the flags, where you have a group of investors that will own a lot of hotels. So now they can go and apply on a site-by-site basis for this relief. In contrast, a B&B is typically a family-run business, one site on it. So they automatically qualify. But what the exemption does is allow the large hotel chains to qualify.
So as Heather was talking about earlier, it sounds like the first order of business is cutting expenses, and the second order of business is figuring out how to get financial assistance through this time. Is there any strategy, like rescaling your business, which I guess relates to cutting costs, but is there anything else besides getting money from the government that people can do, small business owners can do, to get through this time?
Just try to hold on to your money. I mean, go to everybody that you owe money to your vendors, to your landlord if you're leasing space. And I've also read some stories of a lot of gig workers that can't work doing things like doing DoorDash or, you know, meal delivery services, things of that nature. But it's not going to be easy.
Yeah. You're listening to Coastline. Small businesses around the country are on the brink of shutting down due to the economic challenges of the coronavirus. We have two business counselors with us today exploring options for business owners. Heather McWhorter is Regional Center Director for UNCW's Small Business Technology and Development Center. And Ken Jernigan, a retired CFO, is now a SCORE volunteer. They're answering your questions during the live discussion on Wednesday, April 8th. You can ask a question or tell us about your own experience by sending an email to coastline@whqr.org. What are some of the bigger misunderstandings that the two of you are finding among small business owners during this crisis? Heather McWhorter.
Well, I think that the rules for the programs have changed so many times that has resulted in confusion in the small business community about whether or not it would apply to them, whether or not it's, you know, good for them financially to pursue the loan. So I would say with that, just, you know, call SCORE, call SBTDC, call your bank, and make sure you have the most up-to-date information. And so far, that is the primary confusion, concern that I'm seeing as a counselor. I don't know, Ken, if you are also seeing that.
Yeah, there's a lot of misinformation out there about how the program works, and you're right. The frequent changes have contributed to the confusion. I counsel people just to, if they're looking for a PPP loan, first talk to their banker if they can talk to them and see how they're handling it. But the program will get sorted out, and you know, I think this will come into sharper focus as time goes by on it, and people just have to work through the process, I'm afraid.
Yeah, and there are webinars popping up all over the place for small businesses to try to, you know, coach them through. How do I, as a small business owner, know if a webinar is just, you know, taking me down the wrong road or giving me misinformation? Are you meeting people who are getting wrong information online?
Well, I think most of the misinformation comes from online forums and chat groups focused on small business and things of that nature. I've sat in on a few of the webinars, and generally the information's pretty good on the webinars. It's based on the guidance and the regulations as they appear at the moment. Where it comes off the rails a little bit is the forums. I think you have to be careful there.
Yeah, and of course, some businesses are large enough to be able to afford lawyers and CPAs to walk them through, you know, the weeds in terms of what's there. But a lot of small businesses, like for instance, a house cleaning business or a very small restaurant, can they afford experts to help them navigate these kinds of technicalities?
They can't. And that's why the SBTDC and SCORE exist by the Small Business Administration. We're both located in the Wilmington area, but serve a greater region of Southeast North Carolina. And other states have programs similar to ours. And our purpose is to create jobs in the community, to create business in the community, and to create this economic wealth in our community. And so for the housekeepers, for the power washers companies, for the painters. We're here to help you, as well as, you know, we're helping the larger manufacturers in the area as well that, you know, have a couple hundred employees because they still meet that SBA definition. But we are here for small business.
And Heather McWhorter, you're encouraging sole proprietors and independent contractors to apply for this. It's a cash advance option because these are people who were initially, I think, a little, you know, some of them are not eligible for the unemployment benefits that are coming out, and yet they don't have these robust businesses. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Sure, absolutely. So the Small Business Administration Economic Injury Disaster Loan, EIDL, is applicable to small businesses, to sole proprietors, to independent contractors. And with that, when you submit the application online, there is a box that you simply check to be considered for an advance. And it's a $10,000 advance that does not have to be repaid, even if you are denied a bigger economic injury disaster loan. And so that can be used for payroll. And so if historically you paid yourself as a sole proprietor, you can use those funds to pay you. It can be used to pay sick employees. It can be used to pay rent for your business or mortgage costs for your business. So, again, that's a great option for sole proprietors and independent contractors.
Okay, and we have an email from Amy who asks, what about gig workers, which is what specifically Airbnb hosts applying for a PPP loan or an economic injury disaster loan? So Airbnb hosts, what would you tell them?
I would recommend that they apply for that EIDL advance, the $10,000 advance. I would have to double check the guidelines for Paycheck Protection Program just because they've changed. Ken, do you have a feeling?
Yeah, you know, they can. Independent contractors and sole props are eligible for PPP. They cannot apply technically until Friday. That's the first day. Keep in mind the amount of your PPP loan is based on 2.5 times your monthly average payroll in 2019. So if you're the only employee, you know, basically you get 2.5 months for that, which is not going to be a huge amount, but every little bit helps, I suppose. One of the big differences, though, between the EIDL and the PPP that I'd like to point out is that I think 2 days ago, the Massachusetts District Office of the SBA released guidance on the 10K advance, the $10,000 advance, where they said it would be tied to employee role, $1,000 per employee up to a maximum of $10,000. Now, I have not seen that anywhere else except come out of the Massachusetts District Office of the SBA. So, again, this is, you know, changing information. The other point on the EIDL and use of funds that you get from the EIDL, EIDL funds can be used for any working capital purpose, which means that if you have vendors that you have to pay, you could pay them through EIDL, or if you have business credit card bills that need to be paid, that can be done through an EIDL loan. PPP loan is the proceeds are limited to payroll, generally, and facilities costs, so rent or mortgage payments plus utilities. So there are fine differences between the two. And then if you use proceeds under PPP for a non-approved purpose, you're not likely to get it forgiven.
You're listening to...
The other
go ahead.
Things that listeners should know is that you can't apply for personnel costs from both the PPP and the EIDL. If you apply for personnel costs for both, one will be wrapped into the other. So, for example, that EIDL that was already approved will be refinanced right into your Paycheck Protection Program then.
Okay. Is there any advantage to being in an area that relies on tourism as such an important part of its economy in terms of resilience? I mean, is this going to mean a bigger blow to the Cape Fear region, or do you think it's possible it could recover faster when all these stay-at-home orders are lifted?
I will say, after Hurricane Florence, I was amazed at the resiliency of community and the business community and how we come together as one. And that doesn't come easily. And I think it's just by nature part of our community. And so seeing that really gives me hope for how our community will thrive after this.
Are you seeing businesses that are still in recovery mode from Hurricane Florence?
Yes. Actually, we started off 2020 by reaching out to the businesses that were impacted by Hurricane Florence, and we were helping them by performing financial reviews to see if they were financially back to where they were. Because when you think about it, during Hurricane Florence, trade shows were missed, sales calls were missed. And so that has a trickle effect on a business. Like, this will have a trickle effect on a business. So recovery, even when doors are open again, it takes a long time.
You're listening to Coastline. Ken Jernigan of SCORE and Heather McWhorter of UNCW's SBTDC are with us today. They're answering your business questions on this Wednesday, April 8th. You can ask a question or tell us how you're coping during this economic downturn by sending an email to coastline@whqr.org. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, more from listeners. It's also the last segment, so you have just a few minutes left to get your own question or comment in during the live Wednesday discussion. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn for Coastline. Listening to Coastline, I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn. Today, it's a look at how small businesses in the Cape Fear region are meeting the economic challenges brought on by physical distancing requirements and stay-at-home orders. Heather McWhorter is Regional Center Director for UNCW's Small Business Technology and Development Center, and Ken Jernigan, a retired CFO, volunteers for the national nonprofit SCORE, which connects mentors with business owners. We are live this Wednesday, April 8th. If you have questions, you can email us at coastline@whqr.org. This is the last segment, so just a few minutes left to get your question or comment in. And Heather McWhorter, just before we went to break, you were talking about the recovery from Hurricane Florence. And you've said that you focus on long-term recovery for businesses and also on financial acumen. How common is it for a small business owner to have a really great product or service, but just their lack of financial acumen becomes their Achilles heel? And what are some of the common mistakes that you see?
So that actually is very common. And if a listener owns a business and it's you, just, you're not alone. I will say that, which is completely okay. Because
you're saying it's not a character flaw to not be a great
business
person.
It's not a character flaw, right. And small business owners usually start a business because they're an expert at not on banking or financials, but, you know, they have a real passion about cleaning other people's homes or painting or maybe a technology startup. And so sometimes financials can be an afterthought. Usually the biggest thing that we see that counselors at our center counsel on is controlling cash flow. And it's knowing what money's coming in, what money needs to go out to pay bills. Making sure your business has insurance is another one. Continuity insurance right now would be a really good thing. So if you can squeeze that into your budget, please do. But again, ask for help from SCORE or SBTDC, and we both have different tools that we can put your basically your tax statements through to see how you're performing year over year, what you need to pay attention to.
Sean is a local business owner. He wrote to Coastline at WHQR.org, and he has a couple of questions. Mm-hmm. I like his questions because they're so specific. And, you know, maybe we could use these as case studies. He says, I'm a co-owner of Varnish Ale and Spirits, a bar and music venue downtown. We were mandated to close on St. Patrick's Day and have been closed since. He says, I attempted to file with our bank, Wells Fargo, on Friday. They said they weren't ready, but would let us know when they were. He received a notice Monday that said they would contact us when we were next in line from letting them know on Friday. Still no word. Sean says, I'm nervous the funds will be gone. I've contacted multiple banks in town, but they've all told me I need an existing account with them in order for them to help me. Any ideas of where else I could look?
So,
From
what I've heard, there's been about $60 billion committed of the initial $350 billion. And then we're hoping for $250 on the way through this second phase. I've been in contact with a lot of banks as well that say, well, we're taking care of our customers first, but bear with us once we get this into a smoother running operation where we can accommodate our existing customers, then we'll start looking at new customers. One of the issues with new customers is they have to comply with the Bank Secrecy Act, which basically means that you have to produce more documentation than if you were a borrowing customer from the bank, and I think that's one of the reasons. The other is SBA lenders are not just local. They are national in scope, and even the ones that have offices here in Wilmington may, for example, make SBA loans in California or Texas or Oregon or wherever. So that market can be approached as well as they work through the process like the local banks. So there are many more out there. And then sort of the third leg here is the non-bank SBA lenders that are trying to get into this program. Now, there are 14 of those nationwide that have been approved already. They were approved before the disaster.
So these are new lenders, you're saying?
Yeah, they're non-banks. They're not regulated financial institutions like a traditional bank would be through the FDIC or the comptroller of the currency, whoever's the regulating body. They're basically... They're lenders that are funded in various ways, but they're in the SBA market, and they have lended, have loaned into the SBA market previously. In addition to that, the program calls for new lenders to apply just specifically for the PPP program and not the other SBA programs. And the folks that are lining up to do that are the usual online lenders that you go on. The good thing about the program is that the interest rate is capped. So they can't really take advantage of you from an interest rate point of view when they make the loans. But all this takes time to work through the system, of course. So unfortunately, folks have to be patient. But I think better days are coming for the program. I think it will improve as time goes by.
Ken Jernigan, are there any other risks for small businesses? And yes, Heather, I'll get to you in a second, but just other than interest rates being capped, as a small business owner, is there anything else that I might need to think about before going with one of these new lenders?
I would try to find out as much about them as I can. I mean, you can read some of the online reviews. You can try to talk to some of their customers. I mean, I work with folks that borrow from these people, as well. I mean, the advantage that the online lenders have offered is they will get you money very quickly. The disadvantage is you pay for your convenience on this. So I do a little bit of due diligence on the lenders before I actually got involved with them, even if they are still approved for the program.
Heather McWhorter.
Yes, and I wanted to reiterate, you work with your local bank that you have a loan with already. If they're SBA approved, make sure you're in that queue. But I understand the urgency. Actually, one of my clients reached out to me today, and she's been in the queue since Friday, and she's not making any progress. And so talk to multiple banks, I would say. And these online lenders, we're seeing statewide some PPP loans get approved already. And so look at those as well, because you know, we need to keep these businesses afloat. But also do know that the local banks and credit unions are working very hard to get everything in line for the businesses. They just got the guidelines on Thursday night. So this is the process.
Yeah, if I could add that credit union's a good place to go because they're more likely to take on board a new customer than, say, a large bank, I think, and sometimes they're a little bit easier to work with. But I try my local credit union.
And this is also something that Sean could come to one of you with, right? He could get some help navigating the options.
Absolutely.
And, right. Yeah.
What is your workflow like right now? If he did come to you, is there a queue that he'd have to get into, or you must be inundated right now?
Well, we at the UNCW SBTDC, we are inundated, but we are on top of it. We are responding within a day right now to all inquiries. There are six of us, so and this is all we're doing, is helping with disaster recovery. And so maximum, I think, would be a day. We're also, in addition to the incoming inquiries, which we respond to right away, we're reaching out to our existing businesses to help them, business clients, to help them along the way.
And his second question involves self-employment. He writes, the majority of my income comes from my wedding DJing. I'm 1099'd by a local DJ company and have been working in that market for 10 years. He says, I generally have 8 to 15 weddings booked every month from April to October. March, April, and now some of May's weddings are canceled or are canceling. As a self-employed DJ, can I apply for either or both of the PPP or EIDL loans?
Yeah, you can apply for both. The way they track the EIDLs is by employment identification number or Social Security number, depending on how you report that business income on your federal tax return. But as Heather pointed out, if you do this, you have to be careful not to double dip on the proceeds, because that's going to affect your forgiveness, and it's prohibited by the regulations. So what we've been telling folks, that if they're going to do that and they're going to get money through both programs, is to set up two separate bank accounts and keep the money segregated, and keep it segregated as well from a general business account, and document your expenses all the way, just to be on the safe side.
Yeah. We're hearing a lot about, you know, business meetings turning to Zoom, and of course, we're all working remotely in all these different ways. Do you think that this is going to start to create new businesses, new online businesses? And the reason I ask this, I think about the 2008 financial crisis. And, you know, there were a lot of people who were laid off, for instance, from blue chip companies, and then wound up opening a cupcake business, which they'd always wanted to do, but wouldn't have taken the risk before. Are we likely to see some kind of movement in sectors because of this in a positive way?
I would forecast yes. And, you know, how can it not shift after something like this? Plus, entrepreneurs are so innovative and positive. They're great to be around, that they will turn a lemon into lemonade every time. Actually, every Wednesday morning, we have something called 1 Million Cups, where entrepreneurs come and talk about what they're working on. And this is streaming on Facebook right now on Wednesday mornings. But just this morning, an entrepreneur came up with a way to track epidemics. And he was talking about it to the community and the help that he needed in developing this new product. So I do think that we'll see a surge in entrepreneurship.
And Ken Jernigan, you faced the 2008 situation. What did you do then? And what lessons can you bring from that 2008 crash that might be applicable here?
Well, in terms of counseling businesses, I was basically helping some folks apply for their disaster loans, their physical disaster loans. as far as innovation coming out of this, I think it's very interesting, and it kind of remains to be seen. But one good example is, and I forget the name, the smart thermometer that uploads the data to the cloud, and that way they can track fever in different locations, which is a leading indicator of the virus. So it's stuff like that that's going to happen, I think. We'll see.
And so this is available now, the smart thermometer?
Yeah. I mean, check it out. It's very interesting. There's on their website, they actually map trends, temperature trends, the people that participate with the thermometer. Mm-hmm. It costs about $30, I think, the thermometer. But it's an interesting thing.
And Heather McWhorter, you just mentioned 1 million cups that you said streams live on Facebook every Wednesday morning. What are some other resources that people who are struggling to navigate their small business landscape can look to for solid info?
Sure. Well, I like to think the SBTDC website has solid info on it. It's sbtdc.org/coronavirus. Our state office in Raleigh is maintaining that, and only the up-to-date verified information is on there, and it has the list of all these Bloom programs that we talked about, plus a lot more, like tax incentives for keeping people employed. And so do take a look at that. 1 million cups is really fun. It's for the entrepreneurial community. That's Wednesday mornings, usually at UNCW at the Center for Innovation and Entrepreneurship, but it's on Facebook now. SCORE, Cape Fear Community College, the Small Business Center, is also providing a lot of great webinars. There's a whole lot of resources available to help the small businesses survive and thrive through this.
Ken Jernigan, any resources that you think, now that small business owners might have some time also to educate themselves, what are the best books that somebody might get their hands on, or where would you send them for information?
Well, they could always come to us. We're at capefear.score.org. But what most people do here is they'll get in-person counseling, which, of course, we can't do anymore. So what we're doing is doing phone and video counseling. And the way to obtain an appointment for that traditionally is either go on the website and sign up there, or they can phone in for an appointment at 910-452-5395. We put out routinely newsletters and updates. We've been following the legislation and the guidance on these two programs, and we will do video training. And we just had a session, I think, for restaurants, particularly on this, through like a Zoom video conference, things of that nature. Other than that, there are other resources through the community college and through, of course, SBTDC here. But unfortunately, it's a lot of the information scattered out there that it's very hard to pull together. No one central place, so they could do like I do and spend a lot of time searching for this information on the Internet and talking to people. It's unfortunately time-consuming.
And, of course, we will put links to these resources on our website as well. That's this edition of Coastline. Heather McWhorter of UNCW's SBTDC and Ken Jernigan of SCORE, thanks so much for being with us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Coastline's production team is led by Rachel Keith and includes Ken Campbell, Doc Jardin, and Marissa Castrino. Coastline is a production of WHQR Public Media. If you missed part of this episode, look for it at whqr.org, get the podcast, or find it on the HQR app. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn for Coastline.